Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli. Information at bloomingfoods.coop and goodsforcooks.com. Online at goodsforcooks.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Real food, green living.
Real food, green living.
Earth Eats.
Earth Eats.
Hi, hi, I'm Annie Corrigan. Today is installment number one of our four-week preparation for our holiday feast. Two appetizers on the menu today both revolve around big hunks of cheese. First, a baked brie cooked over an open fire, and then a goat cheese ball that will make you wonder why you ever bought one of those orange things covered in nuts from the store. And I speak with food blogger Mimi Ito, who celebrates the mundane tasks of her everyday life by posting photos of the lunches she packs for her kids on her blog. That's all coming up on Earth Eats. But first, here's Liz Leslie with a look at this week's news.
A post-Thanksgiving cranberry recall, peanut butter prices ripple effect, and Monsanto gets the okay internationally. It's been a busy start of December in food news. Ocean Spray voluntarily recalled some packages of craisins after concerns they were contaminated with metal fragments. The FDA sent a press release last Friday, a day after Thanksgiving. The timing had some scratching their heads, as cranberries are a holiday favorite. Ocean Spray denies a cover-up. The company first alerted the FDA the Wednesday before the holiday. A hot summer combined with decreased planting of peanuts has sent peanut butter prices soaring. One consequence, aside from making your PB&J pricey, food banks are feeling the squeeze. Peanut butter is a protein-packed kid favorite, but rising costs means less peanut butter at banks than usual. And the French Council of State overturned a ban on Monsanto genetically modified seeds this week, much to the dismay of GMO opponents. The court argued there isn't research to support harm to human or animal life. The French government has said in the past, however, that it would support a new ban should the ban that was in place be overturned. You can read more news updates and get the latest in food news on our website, eartheats.org. And be sure to keep an eye on our Twitter feed and on our Facebook page. Just search for Earth Eats. For Earth Eats, I'm Liz Leslie.
We're in Columbus, Indiana, preparing two cheesy appetizers for our holiday feast. Chef Daniel Orr's longtime friend, Gretchen Marks, has opened up her home and kitchen to us very generously. The centerpiece of her living room is a fireplace, which Chef Daniel Orr is taking advantage of. All the dishes will be cooked over an open fire, just like the song. The first recipe is the first thing to start cooking today because we want to start eating it as soon as possible. It's baked brie with hazelnuts, pine nuts, walnuts, cherries, and apricots.
What I like to do is to take the brie and cut it in half, and that way it exposes that wonderful, rich, creamy interior. And then I can put it right back in these boxes and decorate it. I'm going to put a little bit of salt and pepper on it. And that's just going to kind of wake up those flavors a little bit. And I've got a kind of collection of different dried fruits and nuts. So I'm going to use some dried cherries. And then I've got wonderful Oregon hazelnuts. Okay, and we're just going to push those kind of down into the cheese. Okay, and so we're just kind of going around in circles, developing kind of a nice little pattern. You could do stripes if you wanted to. You can be creative with this. Next, we'll do maybe a layer of the apricots. So we'll do a little bit of walnuts and some pine nuts around the outside. And then I'm going to finish by glazing this with a little bit of honey. So here we've got some nice honey. We're using a basswood honey from northern Indiana. And that's going to really kind of bring out the sweetness of the fruit. And it's also going to be kind of our glue that holds everything together a little bit. And then we're going to take this to the fireplace and just let it kind of warm and get all gooey and delicious.
There really is nothing better than baked brie.
It's the perfect thing to serve with some nice crusty bread or crackers.
I see this as like a great appetizer. So we're starting at 10 in the morning. This will be ready, what, in an hour or so? And then we can start eating around lunch?
Absolutely, yeah. This will take, you know, depending on the heat of your fire, and if you get too hungry, you can just kind of push it back in there and get it going real quick. So once you got, and you could do this a day or two ahead, have this in the fridge and just pull it out and either even just set it next to the fireplace and it's going to get warm. In France, they have something called raclette, which is another type of cheese that you have next to the fireplace and you scrape it off and you eat with potatoes. So it's a real old tradition. But I think it's a wonderful thing to have during the holidays. Okay, and if you're going to go to the bother of cooking in the fireplace, one thing I love to do is to roast some garlic. And what you do with the garlic is just cut off the little tips of the heads of the garlic, so that kind of opens it up. And we're going to put it in a aluminum foil package. And we're going to season it with a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper. And then we're going to wrap this up into a little package. Okay, and then the garlic can get nestled in the coals. And you can do this even if you don't do a big fireside dinner like we're doing today. If you build a fire at night, as the coals die down, just kind of nestle this into the coals. And the next morning, you've got some wonderful baked garlic that you can smear on your biscuits or toast or whatever in the morning.
Check out the photos and salivate at the baked brie and the bunch of roasted garlic. It's at eartheats.org. Mimi Ito is an academic with a food habit. As professor in residence at the University of California, Irvine, she studies how social media and mobile technologies shape our everyday lives. As the mother of an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old, she is her family's resident cook, preparing lunches for her kids to take to school. She documents the lunches on her Bento blog, a Flickr account that includes photos of the meals along with a description. This project started in 2003 when her family moved from Japan to the U.S. and when her kids were in preschool. It was part of her early experimentation with camera phones. She recently stopped by the Earth Eats studios while speaking at Indiana University.
Well, it's interesting because we had done studies of camera phone use 10 years ago when it was first starting to take off in Japan. And one of the things that we found was really interesting is that amateur photographers were taking pictures that they never took before. So amateur photography used to be special events and travel. And now people start taking pictures of, like, food, what they're eating every day. That was one of the biggest genres of camera phone photography. And so I got really interested in just, you know, this issue of capturing mundane everyday things, having that heightened attention to your visual environment as part of your everyday life. And one of the things is, you know, I think that women's work and everyday mundane work is not considered something for public celebration as much as it should be. So that was part of my reason of saying, look, you know, I perform this labor, you know, I do this craft work every day, and I want to share it and be proud of it and have it as part of a community of people inspiring each other about those mundane everyday things that get forgotten in that stream of everyday life.
Well, let's take a look at one of the meals that you made, looks like, for your daughter recently. This was from September 6th of this year. I'm going to show this to you. It's adorable. Wow. So there's the highlight of this is that there's a smiley face that looks like it's been made out of seaweed.
Right. So this is a funny one because this is actually the first one that my daughter made herself.
Oh, nice.
She just decided in Japan there's bentos, but then there's keraben character bentos, like the really cute ones that are usually made for small children. But she decided that she wanted to start making these, so she did it.
Tell me what's in this dish.
So this was kind of an amalgam of just stuff we had at home because, you know, one of the things about a keraben is you have to have lots of little pieces and it has to be cute. So she has rice that's mixed with salmon and in the shape of a little bear face, corn, an egg omelet, which I made, and then okra and some shumai.
What I love is imagining her eating this at a cafeteria table with her classmates who are eating chicken nuggets and french fries and having a soda. Have you talked to your kids about how their classmates react to this being their lunch?
It was actually a big problem in the early years when the kids were smaller and maybe through early elementary. My daughter started coming home without having eaten her lunch. And then she said that the kids would say, What's that? And which was another motivation for the Bento blog, right? Just to be proud of what she's eating and think of it as beautiful and healthy, you know.
Let's talk about school lunch as a whole. I'm wondering how school lunches would have to change in order for you to feel comfortable having your kids eat that instead of you having to make this.
The biggest problem I have is not that they'll occasionally eat like a chicken nugget or a tater tot, but the lack of variability in the diet is unfortunate. So even at our school now, which has decent lunches, that I will get them those lunches every once in a while, especially when I'm traveling, it's like the same cycle of, you know, orange chicken, chicken wrap, hamburger, pizza, and it cycles through. It's the same thing every month. And that's where, I mean, for me, lunch is the best time to introduce kids to new food because they're a captive audience. And so that's when I use the school lunches, my packed lunches, as a way of introducing a new item. And at most, the first five times it comes back uneaten, but by time six or seven, and that encourages them to try and experiment. And I think I read it in some parenting book that you don't really know if you like or don't like a food unless you've tried it at least 9 to 12 times. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, what do your kids say to that? I don't care. I don't want to have any more cucumbers. I'm done with them.
They're pretty good sports, partially because they've gotten to the point where they're really reaping the benefits of having an experimental palate. They really enjoy food. They're total foodies. So it's like raw oysters is a good example. You know, it looks bad. It's kind of smelly. And, you know, they just... I get them at the farmer's market and it's like, okay, try it. This is your second time. This is your third time. And then by the fourth time, now they just love raw oysters. And they get so much pleasure out of it that they're now, you know, they're kind of bought in, even though they'll sort of wrinkle their nose sometimes at what they're being asked to try.
I read in an interview you did in 2007 in The Guardian, you said, quote, packing a bento for my kids is like making them a little present every day. So I read that and I thought, you know, I bet a lot of Americans out there would think that chicken nuggets and soda and French fries would be more of a present for lunch than this fresh green okra that we're looking at, than broccoli, than rice. Talk about how your mentality differs from that.
Well, I think it's probably the Japanese mom thing that putting effort and crafting effort into things like that, whether it's bento or making little homemade things, is just part of the aesthetic. It's the effort that goes into it. You know, plus I have pretty strong feelings about nutrition and health and food, too. So it's a way of transmitting my own values.
Look ahead 5 years, 7 years, when your kids turn 18, they leave the house to go live on their own. What food values are you really hoping they take with them?
So I think, you know, for me, I have an interest in food. I think it's a site where, you know, it's almost a site of activism for me. So I tend to load a lot of values into how we eat and prepare and enjoy food. I think, you know, the openness to experimentation, using food as a way to explore culture and life and experience is really a key value in our family. And bringing people together around food and the enjoyment of food is a way of slowing the pace of life in a way that I really appreciate.
You can see what Mimi Ito's kids are eating for lunch these days on her bento blog. Find a link to the blog and see a photo of her daughter's first attempt at making her own katabun on our website, eartheats.org. My Christmas memories, always there's a cheese ball. Always at every right. Christmas, every memory I have is a cheese ball.
And a lot of times they're really bad.
Horrible. They're all wrapped in plastic, covered in miscellaneous nuts. Awful.
And sometimes they're even gritty. And they have this kind of fake port wine poured on top of them. And very odd. Well, we're going to make one that's going to change your mind about cheese balls.
Well, don't get me wrong. I love cheese balls. You know, I'm not a classy lady.
And if anybody calls you a cheese ball, you know, it can be a compliment if you make your cheese ball like this. All right. So I've got about a pound of good goat cheese. This is from Caporil Farms. Judy Shad makes this wonderful soft goat cheese. And she would hate to see you use one of her aged goat cheeses, you know, like the old Kentucky Tome, for cooking. But she loves to see her fresh goat cheese used. You know, when you do an aged goat cheese, there's a lot of love and passion put into that and the whole way that it's aged and processed, whereas the fresco cheese just begs to be played with. And so we're going to do that today. I'm going to make this a little bit sweet and a little bit savory, you know. So we have some dried cherries. You could use cranberries. We're going to rough chop some pecans. And you could use any kind of nuts. We're going to use the pecans. I just think of pecans taste a lot like Christmas to me. And we're also going to throw some bacon in this.
Of course.
So I've got some Moriah bacon from Columbus, Indiana. It's a peppered bacon, smoked pepper bacon. We're going to cut these into little pieces. All right. Now we're just going to mix this up. And again, you can use your hands. One of the best tools in the kitchen. And we're going to season this with some salt and pepper. Okay, I would say for about a pound and a half of cheese, we'll use a good teaspoon of pepper and teaspoon of salt. Remember, you can always add more, but you can't take it out once it's in there. So just mix it in and then taste it and see how you like it. You could put fresh herbs in here, some chives or some rosemary, whatever you like.
Is this kind of cheese just naturally salty or naturally not salty?
Well, Judy makes hers fairly plain and then allows you to do whatever you want to with it. So this one doesn't have a whole lot of salt in it. We got...
It's like a softball of goat cheese right now.
So we got that, and now what we can do is we can decorate it. We can take some rosemary leaves and just kind of press them into the outside. A little bit of thyme. I think that the rosemary really gives it that kind of Christmas tree look and flavor. And there you have it. That's a nice local goat cheese ball with bacon and dried cherries.
Like all cheese balls, the sky just looks like a big mound of cheese. But once you smear it on a cracker, you'll understand. Make sure you serve this to a big group of people, or you'll find you've eaten the entire thing all by yourself. No joke. Thanks to Chef Daniel Orr for the food, and thanks to Gretchen Marks for the use of her fireplace and her kitchen. Come back next week to see what we're making next for our holiday feast. And special thanks to Mimi Ito. Liz Leslie and Sarah Gordon write our news stories. Sia Africa and Eobon Binder mind the website. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Annie Corrigan. Cheers.